Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. Today, it's an all-mailbag show. Right, Darren? I don't think we changed our topic.
No, but we may have to go to a Blunt with Brian show. We've done some Blunt with Brian before where Brian gives quick responses. And
you may or may not like the
answer. So far, he hasn't ever taken soil tests and said, sell the farm. I'm waiting for that super Blunt with Brian because we might get there someday.
Yeah, but why would you sell it? Because many people, they don't know if your soil's good or bad, so they'll pay you rent.
Why wouldn't you? Oh, yeah, there you go. You could do it that way, too. Yeah. Okay.
So anyway.
All right.
It's an all-mailbag show. If you'd like to send us a question, just email us radio@agphd.com. You can also find us on X, Brian Hefty, Darren Hefty, or Ag PhD Media. All right.
All right. Let me give you some quick ones
here. Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag.
First one comes from Riley. He said, I'm looking for suggestions on what to put down for fertilizer. Where do I send in my soil sample results for the Hefty brothers to take a look at them?
Radio@agphd.com.
There you go. See, one up, one down. Nice, Brian.
Yeah, I'm going to go quick. We literally have like 100 questions here.
Okay.
We can't do that many.
This one comes from James
try.
In North Dakota. He said, I'm planting alfalfa on last year's corn ground. I put a pint of atrazine out there June 3rd last year.
Okay, half a pound is the equivalent on that.
I did pro-till the ground twice after it was harvested last fall. Is Eptam my best pre-emerge option?
Yes.
Can it be sprayed onto residue that exists on the ground, then till it in, or do I have to till first?
Nope. You can spray it and then work it in. You just have to work it in immediately. It will evaporate on you starting within 10 seconds. So just understand, you got to be right behind it. I'm not saying you're going to lose it all in 10 seconds, but you have to be as quickly behind it as you can. It's going to evaporate as fast as trifluralin would that we use in soybeans. Also, half a pound of atrazine last year, and you're going to rotate to alfalfa. Would I do it on my farm? No, I would not. Because when we put alfalfa in, we're hoping we get 3, 4, 5 years out of that stand.
Yep, especially if you have high pH soils.
Exactly. High pH spots, you're going to ding it up even more. So I would not do that. I would go to something else. Let me say this too, and I know I'm getting long-winded here, but for our farm, we try planning out where we're going to have alfalfa 3 years in advance because we got to make sure the pH is right. We don't have things that carry over, all that kind of stuff. So you got to plan way ahead. Rotate to something else is our advice.
Matthew has a question. He said, we vertical till in front of our corn in the spring. We're not killing many weeds by doing that. You guys were talking about your corn pre's and possibly putting them out with nitrogen. So here's the questions. What herbicides are you putting with nitrogen, and do you have any recommendations for me? I'm thinking of a group 15 plus glyphosate plus maybe some dicamba with the nitrogen followed by Armazon Pro or something like that.
Okay. I like it all, except I'm a little concerned about the glyphosate. The glyphosate may get tied up to some degree with some of the contaminants that often are in liquid fertilizer. So that's the one part I would worry about. Dicamba at a pint, though, in front of corn, that's great. So in your case, when you say I'm not killing everything with tillage, if you have anything to burn down, the dicamba will do it. I would just say this, though, the weather needs to be warm. If the temp is down in the 50s when you spray that, your dicamba is not going to work very well, and quite frankly, neither will your glyphosate. So for those contact-type killers, you have to have warmer weather. We prefer it in the 70s if at all possible.
All right. This one comes from Logan. I hear you guys talk about salt levels in manure samples.
Yes.
Am I to be measuring soluble salts or sodium or something different?
And total salt.
And is 500 pounds a good number to stay under in all situations?
Okay, so total salt is what you're after. And 500 pounds is what Midwest Labs says when you have 25 inches of rain or more. So the lighter your soil is and the less rain you get, the lower that salt number should be. So what is it exactly? We don't know. Because it all depends on, because just like this. Even in the case of 25 inches, you might still get hurt because you might have 0 inches in your first 3 months, and then you might get the 25 inches. Well, I think we all know if you don't get rain and you have all kinds of salt there, your crop's toast. So you've got to have, well, anyway, I'll leave it at that. So it's not in all situations. That's just a general guideline. So please be careful when you have lots of salt.
All right, this question from CP. If you have volunteer wheat, you guys often suggest using Roundup to control it. If you can't use Roundup or don't want to use Roundup, what else would you use to kill volunteer wheat?
A high rate of clethodim. Now, when you do that, keep in mind, clethodim does last for a few days. So if you were going to raise a grass crop, let's say it was you're planting corn, and you go, yep, I'm going to plant the corn, then I'm going to spray the volunteer wheat. Okay, you can do that with Roundup. You cannot do that with clethodim, because the clethodim will be, there will be just enough in the soil to ding up your corn crop. Don't do that.
All right, got this one from DAC. He said you guys were talking about fixing high pH soils, but one thing you didn't mention is the pH scale is logarithmic, so adjusting a 7.5 down to 7 is vastly easier and cheaper than adjusting an 8 down to a 7.5.
Definitely. Yep, we agree.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You gotta think about that the further.
Here, let's take that a step further. An 8 is 10 times easier than a 9. But then a 7 to a 9, it's 100 times different. And that's what he means by logarithmic. It's not additive, it's you multiply. So anyway, yeah, a 9 is horrific, and it's going to take a long time to get that fixed, unfortunately. So hopefully you're not dealing with anything like that.
All right, get this one in from Robert. And he said, you guys had once mentioned a not-till book that you were talking about. This is on from a show back in February. Unfortunately, I don't remember back there, Robert. And I don't know that we had any no-till books.
I don't either.
And the only book we generally talk about here is Neil Kinsey's Hands-On Agronomy.
Yep.
Outside of that, I don't know if we've had any other ones. So if that doesn't answer your question, Robert, you have to send us some feedback and let us know what you're talking about here, because we're not sure about that one.
I might have to go back and watch that February show, Darren, because I don't know if I'm just getting old, but yeah, I do not remember that.
All right. You can see we're tackling lots of questions that have come in on today's program. If you have a question for us, you can always email us, radio@agphd.com. And our phone lines are open today as well during the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe with Heads Up seed treatment. Heads Up guards your seed from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking your seed dealer for Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD-Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/base.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
What's the difference between John, who bought Enlist One herbicide and Instinct Next Gen nitrogen stabilizer, and Tom, who bought Enlist One and Instinct Next Gen and used True Choice? Only about $5,000 extra in Tom's pocket? Choose True Choice and get up to 10% back. It's really as simple as that. Start saving at Corteva.com/save more.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. It's a mailbag show. We're taking your questions all throughout the show here. We've got a number of questions that have already come into the mailbag. We're trying to catch up on that a little bit. Radio@agphd.com if you want to email us a question, or you can give us a phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. All right, next one comes from Zach. He said, hey, guys, I'm in western South Dakota. These tests make up about three-quarters of a pivot that we've got out here sampled at 2.5-acre grids. Now, each of these is going to corn next year with a realistic yield goal of 250 bushels, but I would sure like to get up near 300 if possible. I see most of my micros are at really poor levels. So should I just try and put a blend on, put them in a 2x2, and feed my crop with a planter? Currently, my options for fertilizing are variable rate 2x2 with the planter, fixed rate broadcast, or fertigation through the pivot. In the past, I've been broadcasting potash, applying 10-30-4-0 in my 2x2, and melting urea down to put it through the pivot. Does anything else pop out to you? This is mostly no-till, but I did buy a strip-till unit last year that I haven't got set up yet to apply fertilizer with.
Okay, so let's take zinc and copper, the two micronutrients that he is most low on, both less than one part per million. If it's us, what we would suggest is just get some copper sulfate, get some zinc sulfate, and go spread those broadcast on your field and have it over with. That will fairly inexpensively fix the problem. I'm not going to say forever, but for a really long time. If you want to do a little bit of 2x2 liquid, we think that's also great. Don't get carried away in the rate, though, because you don't want to get too much salt. We've been talking a lot here on the show about salt, and especially with your soils when you got a 10 CEC. And I get that you have irrigation and stuff, but still, you have a 10 CEC, so it's pretty light soil. So you just don't want to put too much ever in a band in one spot. But yeah, we like broadcasting to fix major soil problems like you're talking about, but then also banding to feed the crop in those situations because all that fertilizer isn't going to be available day one or anything like that. So that's the direction that we would go. When you talk about running stuff through the pivot, you could run some nitrogen, some sulfur, some boron through the pivot. They're pretty, they move well in soil, okay? So running lower rates as you go, you got all kinds of water. We're great with all that. If I had a pivot and I could farm that way with irrigation, I'd be fertilizing every single time that pivot ran across the field with very low rates. Keep feeding the plant. That's a great idea. Beyond that, potassium is one that we talk about all the time here on the show. Not only are you at 2% base saturation K, but because your soil is so light, you don't have a lot of parts per million or pounds per acre in that soil. Around 100 parts per million is all. So right now, that's a great big yield limiting factor for you. So I would keep addressing that too. It's going to be somewhat leachable in your soil because it is so light. So you just want to keep every year putting some on. You might even have to throw a little bit on mid-season, but hopefully not. Oh, one last thing. Manganese, I get that your level looks really low, but you're running DTPA tests here, and in the DTPA, it will be really low when your pH is what yours is, which is somewhere around 7. We like running the Malic 3 test. That gives you a more accurate reading in our estimation of manganese, but as low as it is, and even when your pH starts going down, you should have more than what you do here. So would I at some point be looking at some manganese? I'd try some stuff out, and I don't get too carried away with manganese because it's really expensive. That's the only problem I have. You want to make sure that you get some yield response before you go nuts on that particular nutrient. Oh, and last thing, you don't have, I would call it, crazy amounts of phosphorus either. So P and K are the number one things I'm spending money on. After that, I'm looking at copper and zinc. And after that, I'm going to try a little bit of manganese.
Okay. Thanks for the question. Got a couple of different fields from Mike in South Central Illinois. So here's the first field. I'll tell you about this one first, and then we'll move on to the second one. So Mike said, my field average CEC is 8.9. Looks to me like the calcium levels are higher than they should be in this field. Previously, this was corn. Cereal rye was planted as a cover crop. Soybeans will be planted this spring. Magnesium also appears low. I'd like to get to Neil Kinsey's 68-12 if I could, 68% calcium, 12% magnesium. These are Midwest Lab soil tests. You guys have used them before. Do you shoot for 68-12? Is it going to be a little bit different on a Midwest Labs test? And then these are 2.5-acre grids. And the last one, if you notice on the last page, Brian, is a sample made of all the cores in the field that they made a composite out of just to see how that would turn out because their fertilizer company cannot spread less than 100 pounds of product per acre with their variable rate spreader.
Quite a few years ago, it's probably 30 years ago, we bought a fertilizer spreader for our farm. Since then, we've owned, a couple, three different fertilizer spreaders. We now have a floater. We have upgraded everything, literally everything we can do variable rate on the farm. Sprayer, spreader, floater, you name it, it's worth the money. And it doesn't cost much to get things so you can do your own variable rate stuff. So one of my big concerns here is you don't have micronutrients on any of these other tests that you've got. So I'd like to see that. On the one composite test, that's where they do have micronutrients. Your zinc is only at 3.2 parts per million. That's really low. Your copper is really low at 0.9 parts per million. So, and your boron's at 0.2. So all three of those micros I'm going to invest some dollars in. Also, that's the only one you have sulfur as a test, and that's at 6 parts per million. So I'm going to make sure I'm addressing that as well. As far as the 68-12 thing, I'll be honest with you. We want to fix everything else first and then really address this, try to dial in this 68-12 calcium-magnesium thing. So Neil will talk about 80-10 or 68-12. Keep in mind, that's on his test, and he figures other bases, which Midwest Labs does not do. So it's a little bit different on a Midwest Labs test. The Midwest Labs numbers are going to be just a little bit, need to be just a little bit higher to equal where he's at because he's got the other bases thing in there. Anyway, it's a little bit confusing. If you want more information on that, we can talk about that later. Just send us whatever you need. But, when I look at your soil tests, we're looking at P and K first, always. Well, your phosphorus is real low, and your potassium is even lower. So I'm investing most of my dollars in P and K. I'm going to invest some dollars in zinc and copper and boron and sulfur. And I really, quite frankly, don't have, in a lot of cases, any money left to do anything on this calcium magnesium thing. So if you want to try some magnesium, I'm all for that. Get some K-Mag. Or, dolomitic lime. You got some pHs in the fives. Get some dolomitic lime rather than calcitic lime. And also, when your cation exchange capacity is low, like yours is, you have light soil, as low as, 6.8 is the lowest one I see. That's almost pure sand. If we're talking low CEC, I quite frankly don't want a 68-12. I want more like 68-20. I want a lot of magnesium out there. Get your magnesium closer to 20% rather than 10%. That'll help you hold more water in your soil. It'll be good for your crop long term.
All right, here's this other field, Brian, and kind of some of the same things here. Magnesium levels are low. It's a CEC
pH
of 8.5.
On low side. Yep.
So you see anything
wait,
different
wait.
There? What? CEC is 8.5.
CEC, 8.5, yes. So it's almost the same as the other field. Phosphorus is low, potassium is low, and your ground is pretty light, so we want to keep boosting that magnesium over time. Any lime you get should be dolomitic for the most part. Now, I will say you got a couple spots where your magnesium is close to 20, so maybe you got a couple where you could get calcitic lime, but you want dolomitic lime if and when you need lime in any of those areas. But yeah, we'd like to see more on micronutrient tests rather than just a composite. Because, your composite is not, it's not good on the micros. Everything is low, other than iron.
All right, well, thanks for the questions, Mike. We really appreciate it. Thanks for getting those grid samples. And, it'd be fun to do some variable rate and maybe you find a way to do that yourself.
Yeah, and let me say this, too. I know when Darren was talking earlier in the show about how I'm blunt on some of these things, I know it sounds a little discouraging when I say, this is low. Just start working on it. Over time, I'm sure you'll get things corrected, but just understand P and K is where the first dollars should go. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Higher yield potential starts with the season-long systemic disease protection of Xyway brand fungicides from FMC. Xyway brand fungicides protect corn crops from key foliar diseases and support physiological benefits that help develop healthier, higher-yielding corn. For a difference you'll appreciate at harvest.
Visit your FMC retailer for an at-plant advantage. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at Verify.com. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com. For the smallest investment with the biggest impact on yield, upgrade your planter with Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. To see how we stack up against the competition at a fraction of the cost, call us at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior strip tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an agro-liquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio today. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio, and we're diving into the Ag PhD mailbag throughout the show today, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. All right, Brian, got complete soil tests here to look at. This is from Jace, and Jace said, I'm from Illinois. Had asked you guys about sodium since I only had parts per million, how to calculate base saturation off these tests. But now I'm sending you the tests just so you guys can look at them. What do you think about soil tests? What are some things you'd focus on?
Okay. I've got some averages here, so we can kind of talk about that a little bit. What we like seeing when you give us a whole bunch of soil tests, it's great if I can see the average. I also like seeing the high and seeing the low, because obviously those need to get addressed as well. But what we're dealing with here is pretty heavy soil, 25 cation exchange capacity. And when I look at the base saturation test, I mean, we're at 2% on K. So we talk about it all the time. K is low, especially in a heavy soil. It takes a lot of potassium to balance out with the other nutrients, like magnesium. Magnesium and potassium compete in the plant. You want your ratio roughly 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 in terms of parts per million or pounds per acre with magnesium to potassium. So the ratio that you've got is over 2.5-to-1 magnesium to potassium. So get that potassium up, you'll get more potassium in the plant, and you'll be in good shape. Phosphorus is really, really, really low. You're at, let's see, an average of only 28 pounds. So my first dollar is spent on phosphorus, my second dollar spent on phosphorus, my third dollar spent on phosphorus. Then eventually I'm going to get to potassium. That's where I'm going with that in the beginning. On top of that, your zinc's real low. You got 5 pounds, and we want that roughly a 10-to-1 ratio of phosphorus to zinc. So I'm going to be addressing that. And then copper, not bad. Copper's not too bad. Boron's 1 pound, so you got to keep addressing that. And sulfur, you're only at 14 pounds on average. So, but I mean, the leachables, boron, sulfur, nitrogen, obviously everybody knows you got to keep addressing those every year. But yeah, spend your money on the phosphorus. That's going to give you the best payback. After that, potassium.
All right. Thanks for the question. And get this one that came in from Brian out in Northwest Ohio. He said, love your show here. Longtime listener. Heard you explain time and time again about nitrogen is going to come for free out of mineralization and, yep. and how heat and moisture can impact that.
Yes.
That being said, is there any difference in available nitrogen yield in, say, a 5% organic matter soil in Florida versus North Dakota, given that conditions are more favorable for mineralization for a longer window?
Well, you got a couple things that would factor into that. Number one is what's the soil type? So a 5% organic matter soil in Florida would be really good because a lot of the Florida soils that I've looked at are lighter. But if you had 5% in Florida and you have heat, you go, oh, this is great. You also have year-round growing conditions. Here's the other side of it, though. In Florida, you're going to get way more rainfall and a lot of big rains. So now all of a sudden, yep, organic matter may release some nitrogen, but the moisture may flush it away. So, I mean, you just have to study that. And this is what we say to everybody everywhere. We talk about our area because we're very familiar and we've worked with thousands of farmers in our region. We've worked with some farmers really in just about every state and a lot of other countries and things like that, but not nearly as extensively. So what I'm trying to say is in every area, you got to work on things with a general understanding of, yes, organic matter is going to release nitrogen. How much exactly? Obviously going to vary by the year and the soil type and the heat and all that kind of stuff, but you need to just see over time, okay, what do I think I am actually getting? We talked about this a little bit on the show yesterday. You could literally, if you want to, go pull nitrate tests every week during the year, just in a couple spots in a field. It wouldn't cost much. It literally cost you $10 a week to do this. Let's say you did it for 15 weeks in a row. And you might go, oh my gosh, that's a lot of work. Yeah, but you spent $150 total, and now you have lots of information that's powerful because you can see how much nitrogen is in there all the time as you go through the season. If you did that, even in just in one field in two spots, 5 years in a row, you're going to get to the end of the 5 years and you're going to go, okay, now I got a real good handle on what's happening in my field with nitrogen. And it's something that's literally that simple. Has any farmer ever done that, though? Honestly, Darren, we need to do that on our own farm, now that I've thought about it. Another project for our research guys.
That's what we need, another project.
Yep.
You can tell he's still excited about this year's growing season. Ask him that about doing more projects after we get a couple of weeks of rain right during planting. He's going to say, scrap all the projects. We got to get everything planted.
No way. And see, this is one of the things. You can be as diligent in your farming practices as you want to be. But when you say, this is getting done no matter what, I don't care what happens, this is getting done, I mean, in a lot of cases, that's how you get ahead. Because if you don't have data, then you're either guessing or you're listening to some other expert who, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, is also guessing. So we like having as much data as we can, and then we use that to make our decisions. And then we always get a little smarter when we have more data.
All right, Evo's got a couple of questions here. He said we were talking about no-till versus strip-till. So he said, can we build up base saturation levels of potassium with KCl or potash?
Yep. Yes.
Can we do it in a strip-till band?
Well, you can. I don't know if you want to. And one of the concerns is if you get too much salt in one spot, then you could potentially burn some roots. So yeah, you would build.
That leads to the second question. If I did a band of 32% nitrogen or potash
yep.
with the strip till, would I get it too concentrated where I would kill living organisms in the soil?
I'm not as worried about the living organisms, the microbes, as I would be the roots. That's what I'm concerned about in your crop. Because here's the thing. The microbes, even if you kill them, what you've affected in soil is a pittance for what's out there. And within a couple of months, everything would be right back to normal where it was. But if you damage your crop, you lost a year's worth of crop and massive amount of money, and we don't want that for you. So you got to be careful with salt load. Our advice is this, and our experience tells us, if you want to build your soil, you do it in broadcast. If you want to feed the crop and maybe go on a, oh, I'm going to bump my rate by 10% over what the crop's going to need, okay, that's fine. Do that in a strip till or, you know, some kind of band, whatever. But even then, you have to be careful of what's the load, how heavy is my soil, how much rainfall do I get, how close is it to where the roots are going to be, and that kind of thing. The more soil you have that's separating where that fertilizer is from the plant, the better off you are in the beginning. Yeah, just be really careful. Banding is a great idea, and we talk about banding very often, especially for rented ground, but it's not a great idea for building, and it's not a great idea if you overload things and now you have too much salt and it kills your plant's roots.
All right, yesterday we had a question about putting zinc and copper in with bacterial type products like Pivot Bio or Ethos XB, and we were talking about different forms of zinc and copper that were worse on microbial life than others. I got a follow-up on that. He said, hey guys, thanks for the info. Yep, it turned out the products we were using were absolutely deadly for Pivot Bio, so we returned that product. And on the FMC, they said the zinc was no problem. They were testing copper right now. And one company I talked to said in the spore form, they didn't have an issue, but any live bacteria, of course, was an issue. So just the other questions that I had for you guys were just, what about chelated zinc, chelated copper? Did you guys do any testing with those two?
Yeah,
products?
Chelated zinc is not too bad. Much better than citrated zinc or zinc citrate or ammoniated zinc. And as far as copper, I don't remember off the top of my head which forms of copper we've tested, but even copper sulfate, I'm going to be concerned. Copper is one of the most lethal things that you've got for microbes. Be real careful about that. So I'm not saying it for sure will kill whatever you're talking about, but I'm worried about it because there's copper in there.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. And we'll get back to more of your questions coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example. Talk openly and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. I get an email from Connor. He said, I'm attaching my soil and my water samples. I grow cotton and grain sorghum on a pivot, 60 acres of each. The field's 120 acres. I normally get 15 inches of rain, and I can also pump 250 gallons a minute out of this well that has questionable water quality. Just wondering, what can I do to minimize salt injury and balance out soil nutrients? And do you think I'll be able to flush enough salt out of this soil to prevent crop injury?
Okay, so what I don't have here is cation exchange capacity on this soil test. So I don't.
So this is 120 acres. How many samples you get, Brian?
One.
Yeah,
that's the other thing. Interestingly, right on the soil test, it says that this lab recommends less than 40 acres per sample. Area represented, in this case, is 60 acres. That's what this test says. Look, when I wanted to talk about this today anyway, so this actually works out great. When you do a composite test, which is really what this is, you're averaging a bunch of stuff out. Now, I'm not saying that things are exactly, that they aren't exactly even across your field. But I will just ask you this, for anyone listening today. When you combine your crop, is the yield exactly the same across all, in this case, 60 acres? Is it exactly the same? If it was corn, is it exactly 250 bushel corn all across? Is on cotton, is it exactly three bales all across? I would seriously doubt it. And when it's not, then what does that tell you? That something's off. Something's wrong in the soil, most likely. So we need to figure it out. And if all you have is an average, you're not going to figure it out. I'll give you the example on our own farm. When we started working more intensely on soil tests over, well, it's been 25 years ago now. And the reason why is because we were doing some of this composite stuff and not getting anywhere. As soon as we started doing some small grids, we go, whoa, what is going on here? We thought that we had an average soil pH in the mid-6s. And now come to find out, we've got some pHs in the 4s and 5s and some in the 8s. Well, if you don't treat those differently, you're in trouble. So we'll talk about this test, but here's my advice. And quite frankly, if you're listening today, this is my advice to you. A lot of people want to do composite tests or great big zone tests, okay? I don't like either. Here's what I would encourage you to do. Let's take 10% or maybe 20% of your acres. So let's just say it's 10%, and let's test it once every 10 years. And you go, what? Everybody else says you have to test every other year or every fourth year. I'm not saying I wouldn't like that. That'd be great. But if you're telling me, well, I only want to do so much work, I only want to spend so much money in soil testing, here's what I would suggest you do. Take 1/10 of your ground and extensively test it. I'm talking 1-acre grids, because I run into a lot of big farmers too all the time. Well, I'm farming 30,000 acres. I can't do 1-acre grids. I'm like, well, if it pays, why can't you? Hire somebody and do it. But if nothing else, okay, let's just take 1/10 of your ground. Now it's only 3,000 acres. Now that's less than what we're testing on our own farm. You can do that. Just do that on 1-acre grids. And now you really learn. You dial it down to that 1-acre grid. And now you find out, okay, what's good here and bad here? What's good here and bad here in another area of the field? And then you variable rate to even things out. And then with the other 90% of your acres, you just do crop removal. So the Verify software that we're using now on our farm, if we don't want a soil test, perfectly fine. We just take the yield map. It automatically generates a fertilizer application map, and we go put out exactly what the crop removed. So in the areas where we got 300 bushel corn, it puts out enough fertilizer for 300 bushel corn. And the areas where, unfortunately, we got 150 bushel corn, well, it just puts out fertilizer for 150 bushel corn. So now everything's back to even, and it's pretty easy. So that's what I would suggest you do. Okay, so let's get to this. Running the calculations, this also doesn't have base saturation. So I've run calculations. This is approximate. It looks to me like it's only about an 8 CEC. So it looks like relatively light soil. So as far as flushing salt out of a relatively light soil, it's pretty easy. You know, it flushes out some of the harmful things like excess sodium. Like in this case, my calculation is you got 3.5% sodium. That's too much. Sulfur. It takes 1 pound of sulfur to remove 1 pound of sodium. You've got 61 parts per million of sodium. That would be roughly 122 parts per million, or sorry, pounds per acre, 122 pounds per acre of sodium. That's not that tough. You just throw some extra sulfur out. And it looks like your magnesium is really high, like 37%. So if it's me, I'm going to use a little bit of gypsum every year. And I'm not going to use tons of gypsum, but would I use 300 pounds, 200, 400, something like that? Yeah. I'd do that, 100, 200, 300 pounds of gypsum. I'd start trying some of that because you need some more calcium. You want to flush some of that sodium out with the sulfur, and you can also flush some magnesium out with that sulfur. So that's one of the things that, or those are some of the things I'd be looking at. I'd keep pushing the phosphorus just like they're telling you on this soil test. Your phosphorus is at 47 parts per million, not terrible, but keep pushing that. Your potassium is actually really good. I'm showing it's 10% base saturation K, and your ratio of magnesium to potassium is also pretty good. So your potassium level's fine, but I'm pushing the zinc, you're at 0.32 parts per million. I'm pushing the copper, you're at 0.09 parts per million. And then always in irrigation and light soil like this, you need boron, you need sulfur, and you need nitrogen, all the leachables, on a very regular basis, multiple times per year. Small amounts.
Okay, thanks for the questions. Get this one in from Jeremy over in southeast Missouri. There's three different fields here that I've got sorted out for you. So first of all, he said, we're doing various soil testing and setting up soil sampling based on those zones, but I'm thinking I need to at least double how many spots I'm taking out of each zone. What are your thoughts on
how
this
big are the zones?
Testing? Well, you can see the field size at the top of each of those three.
Okay.
And that's how many samples you get. So I guess I didn't calculate how many acres per sample that.
Okay, well, in the one, it says 80 acres. Well, wait, this one, let's see. No, this one's 69.45, and I've got 10. Is that right? 10. Okay. So, I mean, it's not terrible, but
if he doubles the number per zone?
Well, it would make double the number of zones. Yeah, because right now it's 7 acres.
Roughly
then you're
3.5 acres.
Then you'd be 3.5 acres. Yeah. That's much better. It's like we were just talking about, though, honestly. And we started doing one-acre grids 5 years ago. It's amazing. It's made us all kinds of money. I love it. You don't have to do it every year, though. So I'm at least taking a field, and I'm going to do one-acre grids every single year. Do that, and then you can really see. And you could also do a little comparison to the zones and see, okay, is it even worth my time to do the zone stuff anymore? We went away from zones 5 years ago because it wasn't working for us. The one-acre grids is great, and then at least you just put back crop removal. But anyway, okay.
Okay, so here's the questions. He said, I've got three fields, varying degrees of magnesium concentration, which I feel needs to be addressed to help free up locked-up nutrients. I heard you guys talk about adding lime to increase calcium and change that calcium to magnesium ratio, but I'm wondering, would gypsum be a better choice for me since my pH is pretty good and the sulfate might help flush out magnesium?
Yes, it would.
My agronomist has been recommending ammonium sulfate so far.
Yeah, and I like ammonium sulfate too. That'll help flush out excesses. So sulfur is what you need for excesses. I like gypsum.
Sulfur and good drainage underneath the fields. So if you've got drain tile, you know, what's the CEC?
Well, it really varies. As low as 9, as high as 22 on this one field. As low as 14, as high as 29 in another field. And 5 up to 16 in another field. So basically everything. He's got super light soil to super heavy soil. And that's the other challenge, is you have to farm those things at least a little bit differently. And I know it's frustrating when it's in the same field, but when you're dealing with pure sand like that 5-CEC, you got to keep feeding that on a regular basis, and even potassium will be leachable there. So that's one of my big concerns. Okay, let's come back to the gypsum thing. Gypsum only works if you need both the calcium and the sulfur. The question is, do you need the calcium? So when I look at your soil test and I go, okay, we're already at 60% to 70% on all these fields, it doesn't look to me like you need that calcium real bad, which is why the agronomist is saying use ammonium sulfate. But you do certainly have areas where gypsum would work, where your calcium's below 65%. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of grower success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs, with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm data platform might let you manage your fertilizer plan by helping you set sample points, determine management zones, or create fertilizer recommendations. With Verify, you can do all that. But what Verify does that no one else can is take yield data straight from your combine, correlate this info to soil test points, and immediately generate variable rate fertilizer maps based on your nutritional goals. Whether you want to build soil levels, balance your field for uniform nutrition, or maintain fertility levels by simply applying what you removed at harvest. And with full integration with John Deere Operations Center, Verify can send recommendations directly to application equipment, no matter the color. Sign up for your Verify account today at verify.com and keep your farm moving. That's VRAFY.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications, all without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, along with my brother Darren. We are live in the Morton studio today in an all-mailbag show. If you've got a question for us, just email us radio@agphd.com. Okay, right before the break, we were talking about Jeremy from Missouri's soil tests, and he asked about using gypsum. I made the comment, gypsum is only effective if you need both the calcium and the sulfur. Well, he definitely needs the sulfur on literally every acre he's got. Okay, there's no question about that. That'll help flush out excesses. It's a good thing, and his crop is just going to be running short because the soil tests are all short, very, very low. But the question is the calcium. So if you're going to put gypsum out, doesn't do you much good if you don't need the calcium. You're wasting money on that side. But what a lot of people hear quite often, whether it's from us or someone else, is we talk about calcium and magnesium percentages, calcium and magnesium ratios, and things like that. So when you hear that, you go, oh, maybe I need to get that addressed. Well, yeah, it does make a difference in yield, but let's focus on the first things first, P and K. And like in Jeremy's case, he's got some Malic 3 phosphorus tests that are down to 10, down to, let's see, that's in one field, down to 17 in another, and 45 in another, and even 45. When you hear 45 in a phosphorus test, you might think, oh, that's not too bad with my lab. Well, sure, if you were running an Olson test and even a P1 phosphorus test, those levels wouldn't be that bad. But not on a Malic 3 test. On a Malic 3 test, that's similar to a P2 phosphorus test, a strong Bray. And what we're usually shooting for on our own farm is 150 parts per million. At least 100 I want to be at. When you're down to 10, what I'm saying here is, if you were to spend money on literally everything, let's say you took one-tenth of your ground and you did just phosphorus, just then another tenth just potassium, and another tenth just gypsum, and all these things, what I'm saying is the phosphorus is going to give you the best payback. The phosphorus is the thing that's the most limiting when I look at these soil tests. So I'm always looking at phosphorus and potassium first in terms of what I'm going to spend for dollars if my pH is good. In his case, his pH is just a little on the low side in a few spots. So 5.9, 5.7, but those are only in a few spots. So would I do a little bit of liming first? Sure, in spots. Then I'm thinking phosphorus is the next yield limiting factor. After that, it's potassium. Okay, then we can start worrying about the micros and all the other things. Now, I'm not saying, well, Brian said don't put micros and don't put gypsum on. Here's what I'm saying. Phosphorus is going to pay you the best. Let's not spend all our dollars on fertilizer on something like gypsum or even half our dollars. Let's make sure we've got all the other things addressed first, and then we can start worrying about, oh, I got to get this calcium magnesium thing right or whatever. So anyway, and in lighter soils in these light spots that Jeremy has, the leachables, boy, you're going to have to be applying those multiple times per year, nitrogen, sulfur, boron, if you want to keep the levels high in the plant.
Yeah, the other thing is, rather than the zone sampling, when you're trying to make major changes, I really like GPS locating where those samples are going to come from, so you can track from year to year and see, hey, am I making a difference? And I don't know how old you are, Jeremy. Let's just say that you're 50 years old and you got 20 more years of farming. It might take you 3 or 4 years to figure this thing out and see, oh, okay, if I do this, here's what's really making a difference on my farm. Great. Then you get to benefit from it for the rest of your career. Or maybe you say, well, my son or my daughter are going to be farming this going forward. Awesome. Figure it out. Pass the information on to them so they can use it their whole lifetime. Start on a small scale on a lot of these things. Make changes that you can afford to make and move forward. And in the meantime, make sure you're doing everything to raise the best crop you can.
Yeah, and I'm going to come back to this because this would be the most frustrating thing if I'm Jeremy. I go, wow, I have soil cation exchange capacity. And this is just three fields that range from 5, which is basically pure sand, all the way to 29, which is super heavy ground. It's going to be tight and it's going to be, I mean, there's a much greater chance for compaction, everything else. So he's got a vast range and it's so easy in life when we can just do the same thing on everything. But unfortunately for Jeremy, he cannot. Well, he can, but it's not going to be that profitable. So you got to really mix things up, change up your practices when you're dealing with sand as opposed to dealing with super heavy ground.
All right. I get this one from Mitch, and he said, I got some samples that I'm sending you. Field that I started renting back in 2022.
Good grief, we've done a lot of soil tests here today. Okay.
Yeah, had tomatoes on it for a long time, and my neighbors told me it would take me a long time, over 5 years, to grow anything decent on it. Well, I got 150 bushel corn right out the start, and I would love to get up to 185 or 200. Just anything you notice on these soil tests?
Well, soil pH, not bad, 5.8 to 6.9. In the fives, I might consider a little bit of lime. It's light ground, though. Cation exchange capacity is 6 to 10, and organic matter is less than 1%. So for me, I'm going to try to do everything I can to build that soil up over time, which means, like for us, if I was farming it, I would raise continuous corn, I would reduce my tillage, and I would work on building that soil organic matter over time. As far as your nutrient levels, here's the problem. We're getting things like phosphorus index on here, potassium index. What I want is, I want parts per million. So I'm going to apologize to you. I can't help you with these soil tests. I don't know how to read them. I need something that's that tells me parts per million or pounds per acre, and then I can do it.
Well, it says on the top. Does this one say they ran a Malic 3?
Yeah, it says a Malic 3 extraction.
See, and they'll give you all the data.
Exactly. They probably have the information. So I would call them and say, hey, can I get my parts per million or pounds per acre? Either way, give me that data. If you want, if you can get that and you can send that in to us, then we can give you a lot better idea. All they've listed on here that I do understand, other than cation exchange capacity and pH, is calcium to magnesium or calcium and magnesium percentages. So your calcium percent is a little on the low side, like down to, let's see, 50% in some cases, and your magnesium's a little on the high side in some cases at 26, but I don't get too worried about that in really light soil. So I think your calcium magnesium thing isn't the biggest issue. It's probably other stuff, but I just need to see what do you actually have, and I can't see it here.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. We appreciate that. Got this one from Jason up in Canada, and he said, hey, guys, I'm sending you an article from Canadian Agronomist website, and it talks about copper and zinc antagonism on low phosphorus soil in wheat. I think it's interesting. They talk about the micronutrients being a problem reducing yield rather than talking about just building phosphorus up and maintaining good phosphorus to copper and phosphorus to zinc ratio.
Exactly. And so what they're talking about is just in a different way. Here's what they said. Copper and zinc can hurt you in the low P soils. What they should have said is get the ratios right. That's what we've been talking about a lot over the last few years, roughly. And again, it all depends on your soil test, but in who's running the test, but roughly 10 to 1 phosphorus to zinc, 30 to 1 phosphorus to copper. If you get the copper and the zinc really high in relation to phosphorus, yeah, it's going to hurt yield. I don't care what crop we're talking.
Okay, our friend Petey out in the, as he calls it, above average state of Idaho, said, hey, on your show yesterday, Ted had mentioned having an excess of good quality hay and asked if there's a way to test for it being weed-free and so forth, selling it as high-quality hay. He said, actually, in our state, and I'm sure in others as well, they do have a noxious weed purity test, at least, that you could prove that you're really low there. In addition to the nutrition and digestibility, you can get that too. So anyway, thanks, Petey. Yeah, appreciate you listening, number one, and thanks for giving that feedback as well. Got this one in from Jim. He said, one of my clients was telling me he listened to your radio show and heard a guest saying if a farmer purchased or inherited farmland, they could assign a nutrient load to the land and write off that part of the purchase price or value as fertilizer. Yep. Just wondering, is this valid? And number two, would it increase exposure to a tax audit down the road?
Well, here's the thing, Jim. We are not tax experts. Now, sometimes we think we are, but we are not tax accountants or anything like that. And so this is a question for your accountant. Do we know of farmers who have done that? Yes, we do. Is it 100% legal or accepted? I don't know. I'd say just ask your accountant. They'll tell you.
Yep. Yeah. Anything that comes down to that, it's great to do some pre-planning. And there certainly are some tricks of the trade that have been learned over time. So having a good accountant that you can go to, even if you say, well, I do a lot of my accounting myself, that's great. Just having a reference that you say, okay, if I just pay your hourly rate and get to ask you some questions, that might be pretty valuable for you as well. Had fun doing the mailbag show today. If you have any questions for us, just send them in radio@agphd.com. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.